Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's show. As always, very excited to be here with you today, and thank you for joining us. We have a really exciting show today, and I'm wondering if any of you have ever thought that you have different parts of yourself. And what I mean by that, we're going to get into and hopefully have some clarity around. But I want to ask you a question. What if the very parts of you that you've been trying years to silence, like your inner critic or the part that compares yourself to other people or your perfectionistic part, what if they're actually the keys to your healing? My guest today, Orly Klempner, knows what it's like to grow up in a world where dieting was normalized, comparison was constant, and scars, both physical and emotional, left her feeling like her body wasn't good enough. And I'm sure some of you listening can totally relate to that. But through internal family systems therapy and mindfulness, she learned to turn towards those parts with compassion instead of shame. And that shift for her changed everything. So today in our conversation, Orly's going to share how to quiet the relentless Ed voice, why validation matters more than quote unquote fixing, and simple ways to soothe yourself when that urge to compare or control takes over. So I want to say a little bit about Orly before I bring her on. She's an integrative practitioner who combines internal family systems, which she will get into more, mindfulness, and trauma-informed yoga to support people navigating eating disorders, addiction, trauma, and anxiety. Her work is rooted in both professional training and lived experience, and she specializes in helping clients build trust with their bodies and reconnect to the parts of themselves they've learned to reject. Orly offers online and in-person sessions through her practice, Orly Living and Wellness. And if you've ever thought you weren't, what I've heard before from lots of people, sick enough to deserve help, or felt trapped in a cycle of never enough, this episode is really going to land deeply. So that being said, I'm going to go get her. All right, Orly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So I always tend to ask my guests if they wouldn't mind sharing a little about their own journey and story. So I hope you wouldn't mind doing that yourself.
Sure. Let's see. I am an IFS practitioner, internal family systems therapy practitioner. And I help people with all different issues, but a lot of them with eating disorders. And I came to that specifically because I grew up, I'm 41. So I grew up in a household where my mom was on every diet fad. And back then it was like a lot of pills. I guess today we have that too. But she was trying out all these different pills all the time. And so early on, before I even understood what was happening. But I think like really, I guess in that sense, it was very normalized. Like dieting was a very normalized thing to do. And I guess expected because my caretaker was doing it. Her best friend was also doing it. But I think I came to starting to dislike my own body when I was in first grade. We had a swimming class that we had to go to. And I didn't know. I was just born the way I was born, and I never questioned it. And I was in class, and people were wearing, like, girls, 6 years old, were wearing bikinis. Wow. And I noticed that their stomachs looked different than mine. And I was, the day I was born, I had stomach surgery that left me with two scars. And it, 6 years old, it was only 6 years after that surgery on a growing body. So it gave a texture to my stomach, not only just visible scars, but like a texture. And I just didn't understand why I looked different. It was like the first time I looked down. And one of the scars at the time looked like a belly button. And I know this because one of the kids walked up to me and said, "You have a second belly button." And then they all started laughing. And I was like, "Oh my goodness, I do. I don't know how that happened." I didn't even know I had surgery. It was just, it was not talked about or anything. Now, I don't remember if I went home and discussed it with my mom or whatnot, but I know thereafter it was like, I just really wished that I had, this was the thought, a flat belly like everybody else, a flat belly. And that was clean, like without any of the scars. And that set the tone for my growing up, living here in Los Angeles, going to school with other girls, and having those magazines and TV, and just feeling that pressure of looking quote unquote normal, in which I believed I did not. And yeah, that kind of affected, I would try to, as we discussed before, like try to eat these diets that you read in the magazine to create a flat belly, and it never works. And yeah, I mean, I kept trying and would compare. There was a lot of comparison, especially in high school, a lot of comparison. I had a friend at school who, she could have been a model because she was like above 6 feet already in high school and really like lanky, oh, gorgeous girl. And I just like idolized her. I was like, I wonder if I like eat a certain way, I'll have that body structure. And I'm sure by the end of high school, I can grow to be like tall like her. I'm really short. I'm like not even 5'2", which I've embraced since. But yeah, anyway, that's been a struggle. And it's taken a lot of work. A lot of parts work has really helped, which is what we do in internal family systems therapy. And I'm a human being. I still struggle today. I have like my bias in my mind compares. It's a lot better. It's a lot quieter. I love myself, which is huge. For the longest time, I did not love the body I was in, and therefore I didn't love myself. I had a lot of self-hate. And then I grew to start to love my insides, but still didn't like the body I was in. And then eventually, with a lot of work, was able to embrace and love the body that I was given.
You brought up internal family systems and the different parts of yourself. I'm wondering, was that part of your journey to healing and embracing, like loving yourself and then be more accepting of your appearance and your body externally as well?
Absolutely. Internal family systems. Before internal family systems, I was studying a lot of mindfulness. I did some retreats, silent retreets, and yoga and whatnot. My journey started before IFS, but IFS was very integral in that it taught me how to face what is reality with compassion. And so in IFS, there's the 8 C's that are the qualities of the higher self. And that would be compassion and caring and curiosity. Those three out of the eight really stood out for me in my healing. I can go over the other ones as well, but like those three really got me through in facing reality of, okay, I want this ideal body and I'm trying so hard and blah, blah, blah. And comparing myself to those who have it and just facing the fact that I do not have that body. Mm-hmm. And these moments where I would, in essence, dream and wait for the moment to have that body. It's like facing that, okay, that is like unnecessary. That's you know, what we tend to do. If I win the lottery, I will do all these things. And it's okay, but you didn't win the lottery. And that is very rare and all that. And so facing that I am not in that body and soothing myself with various tools that we learn in IFS. And why soothe myself? Because that's uncomfortable, right? I think that when, for me at least, I can speak for myself, when I wanted a certain body and wasn't getting it, I would disown the discomfort that I felt from not being able to have that and not facing the layers that are beneath that with just grasping on trying even harder or in whatever way, whether it's eating, exercising, buying certain clothes. It comes out in so many different ways. But to soothe that discomfort is, it unlocked a door into healing that I couldn't just get by, okay, eat a certain way or follow these instructions that are going to heal eating disorders, that's like more traditional. Just really sitting with the parts that are underneath those actions, if that makes sense. The parts that are like hurt, the parts of myself that are hurt. And with that curiosity, like once I can soothe the reality of, okay, my reality is not the way I am dreaming and that I want. It's actually this other way. And that's uncomfortable. So I can soothe that and then get curious about it. So why is it uncomfortable? What is here? What is this to me? Just starting to dig into what that is for me. And a lot of it for a lot of us is society. It's hard to get away from. It's what females, and I know that males experience this as well, but a lot of it, and I can only speak for myself as a female, is what's expected of us to look a certain way and to act a certain way. And then I live in LA, like I said, and we have all these things that make an impression on us, like magazines and people walking around trying to keep up with the Joneses and whatnot. And so that adds a lot of pressure. And I know that feeds into a lot of these parts. And then I started with my mother being like on every diet. So that the voices of those parts are not totally mine. It's society. It's my mother. It's her friend who, like, in my formative years, these adults acting this way. And back then, they would say my mother, her friend, her best friend, and my father would comment on people they see, be very judgy. I won't say it because it's so rude, but, and they would never do that today because they've learned better. But it was a time where people would just like call stuff out and from somebody who's overweight and call them the F word. And then from someone who is very thin and say, oh, she needs to eat a sandwich or something. Or my mom, oh my goodness, when I was a teenager and we would go to the mall and she would see a girl my age, overweight, she would say, oh, she must be on her period. She would always say that. She must be on her period. I never understood why she said that. But all these things like entered my mind. And so those voices are not all mine, but then they became mine. And so I had to grapple with that. I think that makes it easier also is to come to terms with, oh, this isn't all my thinking. Because a lot of times the painful part of these parts are, oh, I'm bad for thinking this way. I'm wrong. I'm unlovable. And so to face that, it's not even me. It's, oh, okay. I can then redefine me.
It also sounds, and I think this is to your point, you didn't have any concept of what acceptable bodies were or what a body was supposed to look like. Somebody else, parents, society, magazines, whatever, defined for you what a body that looked like X. Now they defined like this was quote unquote overweight. This was too thin. This was whatever. And we're not born with ideas about what a body is supposed to look like or not supposed to look like. But when people make comments, we vicariously learn, right? Okay. People make negative comments or shameful comments about other people or themselves. We pick up on these things and now we create these narratives in our own mind of, oh, wait, okay, now we're learning. Okay, if somebody makes a derogatory or shameful comment or negative comment about that person's body type, that's not okay. This is okay. That's not like what not to be, what to be. And so we want to fit into those. Okay, we want to be accepted. We want to be in the quote unquote good category, not this one, because we also don't want people talking negatively about us. We want to feel good, to look good, to be accepted. All humans want to be accepted, of course. Right. And that's just natural. I think that goes back, like even back in the day in group, out group stuff, right? We want to belong.
Absolutely. Maslow's theory, right? One should be accepted and have some sort of ranking in society. So, yeah. I remember even in high school, it was like, it was good to say, oh, I'm ugly or I'm so fat. So to get someone else to say, oh, no, you're not.
Fishing.
Yes. And it was, I remember learning to say that because of hearing others say that and not, I remember it feeling so empty because it was like, I'm just saying, I'm just following. But it's these repetitive behaviors, like words have impact and we talk about ourselves that way. And so to your point, but in reverse, like you're covertly complimenting somebody by debunking what they just said about themselves and making them feel good. And it was like a way to receive it, but also I don't know what word I'm looking for here, but to set yourself in that place of acceptance in your like group of friends or whatever. I just think the teenage years were the hardest.
They and are.
Really, especially when someone is dealing with this, which a lot of us, most of us are at that age. And it just sets the tone for the rest of your life, unless you're willing to look at it and work with it. And even then you have to be so graceful because it's not something that can just be dealt with in a day. It's, I think eating disorders and body dysmorphia and stuff goes so deep, way beyond the stuff we hear in society and stuff.
And to your point, just even psychologically speaking, we're going through the individuation stage during our teenage years. Like we're going from being a child to being adult. And those are the times when we're trying to figure out who we are as an individual. We're going away from our parents. Like we're going from like the times where we're being told, when to go to bed, what to wear, like all the things. And now we're trying to separate ourselves so that we can become independent and adults. And we're taking in all the messages about ourselves. So when we're told things about how we look, or if we're accepted or we're not, or we're bullied, that has a huge impact on who we tell ourselves we are in the world.
Right.
And yes, it's huge. If we tell ourselves we're this, we're that, it's negative, that sticks with us during that time. And absolutely, it can follow you throughout your life. And for anyone listening, really thinking about the impact of messages you got, if you were bullied in high school or junior high, it still stings, it hurts. And it's, to your point, really looking at that and saying, do you still hold on to some of those things? How right. much of an impact does that still have on your self-esteem, or how accepting you are of yourself?
Yeah. And I think that if these are messages you've heard from a really young age, it could take so much work and you still hear those messages in your head. And I think that when that happens, it's just learning how to navigate around it. So not wronging yourself or still having those thoughts, and also learning to disempower them. So just like we would say in mindfulness, okay, they're just thoughts. They're just thoughts. And you can even ask yourself, is this true? Is this true? Because I will still have thoughts here and there, or, oh, that girl over there looks much better, or how does she have that? These random, very fleeting thoughts that I really don't have control over. They're so fleeting. I've learned to respond to myself like, okay, that was just a thought and it's not true. And if I have more time, I love myself, that sort of stuff. And that can be really helpful and combat those thoughts that we carry with us. Mm-hmm. And just to know that it doesn't mean that they're going to go away, but they can just be there.
So curious, if I want to go back a little ways. So you brought up all the 8 C's in IFS, and you brought up the 3. So if we could maybe just go back to what all of the 8 are, because I'm sure people are going to be like, okay, what are all these 8? Yeah.
Therapy is a practice of, it's a way to approach therapy. So it's usually a facilitator working with a client, facilitating the client to become aware of their parts. So we're a system. As human beings, we're a system of parts. And part of me feels critical towards myself for having handled a situation like A, B, and C. Another part of me feels like sad about that same situation because I really wish that the people that were involved in that situation were there for me more, or something like that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
That's just like one little example. In IFS, we have parts of us that are protectors. Protect like the sad parts, the inner child wounds and what have you. Those parts might look like eating disorder parts, or a part of us that like exercises, you know, a lot to control. Think of it like managers are like controlling, right? I have protective manager parts that are like really plan out my day, or love Excel worksheets. And that same part, it works well for that. But then that same part could be like wanting really to plan out food and count and all of that sort of stuff, which then, you know, if it gets into the driver's seat, then there's an issue, right? And then there's protective parts that are firefighters. Firefighters being an eating disorder can actually be a firefighter. It's, if you think of it, it's firefighters put fires out. So when there's something really stressful happening, we put out that fire with a fix of some sort, whether that is deprivation or binging or drug use or sex or rage or what have you. And again, those parts protect what we call exiles, the wounded part, the part of us that was left to be alone in pain. Now we all have a higher self. We all have it, even if it feels like you don't. It's like the sun. Sun gets blocked by clouds sometimes, clouds being the parts, but the sun is still there. And so when the clouds clear, the sun can come out and shine on everything. And so qualities of the higher self are, like I said, curiosity, compassion, caring. There's courage. So courage is like resilience, right? Like we do it anyway, or we stand in the challenge anyway. And then there's creativity. A lot of these parts, before they developed to protect, they were more childlike and creative. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our parts are developed in those formative years when we're just trying to make sense of the world and something confusing happens. Clear is another C, so clarity, confidence, calm, right? Mm-hmm. We know that self is present when we're calmer or we're speaking from a calm place. If we're really excited or fearful or veering off of that middle path, then we know that we might be what's called blended with another part. I think that was eight.
So, I think that people listening can probably relate. It does sound a little confusing, but I think it's true, right? That's where people get stuck sometimes, right? It's like, to your point, like I think it's like even having the eating disorder voice, right? There's like the Ed voice, but then there's like the non-Ed voice, right? It's like you maybe don't want to go exercise, but right. Ed's like punishing you and making you feel guilty and making you drive to go do that. But the other party's, oh my gosh, I so don't want to do this. I just want my time back and I'm exhausted and my body needs to like rest. And there's this competitive part. So it's, and maybe you know, this isn't good for me. It's going to hurt me or all these things, but there's these competing parts of you and who wins out, to your point? Is it the driver, the manager,
Yeah, we have. So to your point, that's called polarized parts, right? Where they work against each other. So a really good example, something I really dealt with is I had a part that was like, okay, I'm going to count everything. I'm going to make sure I'm eating right. And then, you know, what I quote unquote write. And then I have this polarized or competing, in your words, part that's no, screw that. I'm tired of this counting. I've been so good. I deserve, and I can get a reward of eating whatever I want. And then I'm going to take that to the nth degree and like really hurt myself by eating so much I'm going to throw up. And then comes in. So those two parts are competing against each other. And then there's these other parts. So it could be lots of parts working together against each other. So then you have that guilt that's, oh, you just ate all this and now you're hurting and you're gaining all this weight. And it bashes you into submission, basically. And then you get back into that cycle again. Okay, I'm going to do better tomorrow and count. And if I'm like that, counting has another part that's pushing it to count because it's a fear part, right? It's like a hypervigilant part. If you go off of this, all hell will break loose. And so don't do that. And that's like a huge control manager, right? So that's just like one example. There's so many ways it works and so many parts in play, and then it just gets deeper and deeper. But the important thing with parts work is you give yourself grace, you go softly and gently, and it's like dipping your toe into a pool of water and then taking it out, dipping in, taking it out. And when that feels okay, then maybe you put your whole foot in. Now it's cold again, so we take it out and put it in, take it out. And then we slowly get in there. We never like dive in and overwhelm the system, because that's how these parts developed in the first place, is that hurt part was overwhelmed and needed a protector. and a caretaker, for whatever reason, whether they did it on purpose or not, because a lot of times adults don't realize that the child is hurt or trying to make sense of something confusing. So nevertheless, caretaker wasn't there, child left alone in that hurt and tried to make sense of it with these parts. And then it gets reaffirmed in some way over and over again as we grow up. And then it just becomes a core belief. Other parts develop to help confirm that is the case and that's the truth when it might not be. But we always have to validate, even if it's not the truth, we always have to validate that's our experience. Experience doesn't mean the truth, but it is our experience. And I'm going to go back on that because that can be convoluted. There is truth to your experience. If I'm feeling fear, even though there's nothing here to fear, the truth is I'm feeling that fear. It is here. And that's my experience. Now, what is it I'm fearing? I'm fearing the plant's going to come alive and eat me. Okay, is that true? No. But fear is here. So we have to validate and also ask ourselves what's true.
And I love that you said that too. It's like, just because you believe it doesn't mean it's true, but that doesn't mean you're still not experiencing that fear.
Exactly.
And looking at where is that coming from? Like, why is that happening? Why are you so scared? Or why are you having that fear?
And I think in the ED world, a lot of, especially parents, will dismiss their children experiencing ED with, no, you look good. No, you're not fat. No, this, no, that. But you're not validating the child's experience of their fear of whatever that is. And I think you just, with all this work, it's important to validate a person's experience. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it gives them the green light to, like, permission to act out or behave in a certain way. It's just that sentence of the empathy. Like, I hear you. I hear that you're experiencing this, right? That a part of you is experiencing this.
And I think that plays out so much anyway, just because people think they can look at somebody and know if they have an eating disorder, and also at that, like, which one they have, and just to invalidate somebody's experience of something, almost like they need to prove they have one or to prove they're suffering. Or
absolutely,
my goodness, if somebody's just struggling or suffering, it's hard enough to ask for help or speak up or say anything as it is. And so to have that negated or not be believed, oh my gosh, that's like the worst.
Yeah. That's why empathy in general, like just human to human, is so important.
I don't know if you felt this way. I know I did. I was like, oh, there's no way I'm not sick enough. Like, I don't look like I have an eating disorder. And I hear that all the time from people. It's like, what does that look like? When it's, of course you're sick enough. Like, even if just saying that means something, right? That, and if any of you listening think that right now, oh no, I'm not sick, quote unquote, sick enough to seek help or to say anything, or I don't look like I have an eating disorder, no one's going to believe me. I mean, that right there's something just to question in yourself. Wow. Like, that's, it's scary to say anything. It's scary to ask for help.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of times people who, I know I experienced this, because I don't look on the extreme, then yeah, I can't ask for help. It's invalid, or I won't be taken seriously. And if it's challenging enough in your mind and your experience is challenging enough that it breaks your day-to-day function in some way, then it's valid enough to get help.
Yeah, I love that too, because it's true. If it's impacting your day-to-day life, yes. And it's not for anyone else to judge, like, how much you're suffering or how much it's impacting your life. You deserve to seek help and to get help and for it not to impact you so much.
That's right. I think that's like the same with, I've had a lot of clients who suffer from self-harm and suicide ideation. And a a lot of people don't take them seriously when they're not going the whole nine yards. If they're just expressing ideation, then it's not enough. And it's so sad because a lot of people's reaction to that was, oh, they're just asking for attention. And honestly, that is actually just it. Is, yeah, they need more attention most of the time. And fighting against that is not going to help anything. But yeah, just having that, like, if a person says they're thinking and feeling a certain way, I think we should take them at face value.
Yes, absolutely. That makes me sad to hear, because who are any of us to tell somebody, oh no, you're not feeling that way? That is so invalidating. And I think a lot of times people who have eating disorders were told that as children. Oh, they were either shamed for how they felt or told you're too much or you don't feel that way, or learned to not trust their own feelings or emotions because they were told they were wrong, or were maybe even... they got in trouble for expressing how they felt. It was, they were made to feel like they bothered people, or their feelings were too much, or to quiet them down. And that's how they became the mediators, because they learned to, okay, I upset people when I express my emotions. Right. So I'm just going to make everybody happy by being this people pleaser who has no emotions, or just the happy ones, or whatever it is.
Which then bleeds out into the rest of your life, and you lose your potential, whatever that might have been. Like, to that exact example, I actually really love using that example when people ask me what IFS is. It's like when a child or a teenager was made to be small or told they were too much, or and they somehow learned, okay, I gotta quiet down to please. Let's say even in their careers, like, they don't speak up. So then they don't advance as much as they could have, or they don't take risks and go do some extreme sport or something. I don't know, but it's really like live life in the way that they would have. It's so sad because we've got this one life. And so, I'm glad. And thank you for doing this sort of project to bring awareness to people so that we can walk with and hope to hear and see people more and offer them our empathy so that they can disarm. And hey, I'm a human being. I still have it here and there. And like last year, I had a journey fighting cancer, and I'm cancer free now. That's good. Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, so like a lot of those parts came creeping back in of my armor. And my brother still is such an angel, been there for me every step of the way and would help remind me to disarm. And I think when we can do that, even though it sounds like you're getting soft by disarming, or you become weak by disarming, because then you're vulnerable and open to pain and whatnot, but it's then that you can live life more fully, more strongly, whatnot.
Yeah, no, that's a well said. And again, I'm so sorry to hear that, but so glad to hear that you're in a better place now health-wise. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So like on another note, I know you said you're based in LA, but how can people work with you? And do you work only in person, virtually? Like, how can people find you?
So I work both in person and virtually. And I am LA based. They can find me on Instagram under Orly Klempner, or my website, which is just orlyklempner.com. I'm sure you'll have it spelled out in the notes because it's like a weird spelling.
I will.
So yeah, that's the main. I'm on Facebook also, and on my website there's a contact page, so we can be in contact directly. And I offer a 20-minute complimentary consultation for anybody who wants to discover what this is all about, what it would be like working together, if we're a good fit. I work with people struggling with eating disorders, substance use, adolescence, and suicide ideation, like I said, and anxieties. A lot of those are places I've been specifically trained in, but also a lot of people come to me for anxiety, relationship issues, trust issues, stuff like that. So
wonderful. Thank you again so much for being so open and doing the work you do. Really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you for taking the time. I really enjoyed being able to be on here. It was a privilege.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners, so if you like the show, please rate and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.